are some areas of the human mind, and indeed of the world we live in, that were never meant for investigation. There are always those who delve into the darker worlds of knowledge, and many pay with their sanity for their interest. We are some of those people, and this program will tell the story of how we began to study paranormal experiences and their effects on humanity, and how we created a radio series about a restored mansion in a small coastal town in Maine, a center for the care and study of the insane. Since 1992, this story has become known as Hayward Sanitarium. My name is Richard Fish, and I've been involved with the creation of Hayward Sanitarium since it began. Those of you who've been following the series have now heard 10 episodes, and here's the bad news right up front. The story does not finish in 10 episodes, and 10 episodes are all that have been produced so far. But the good news is, the story does have an ending, and more episodes will be forthcoming. We'll tell you about it during the next half hour, as we take you behind the scenes on a modern audio theater production and investigate the making of Hayward Sanitarium. A great many people helped make Hayward Sanitarium, but for this program, I talked with five of those most involved. First, chief engineer and sound designer John Weber.
My goal as engineer and sound designer in this was to really create a sound consistent with the setting that we were in.
Producer Tony Brewer, a writer and actor who now works for the Indiana University Press.
We'd never really done much drama at all, and I don't think we'd ever envision something on this sort of scale.
Lead actor Mike Kelleher, now an aspiring filmmaker living in New York City.
It started out as a small project that rolled into a much, much larger project.
Co-author Matt Bocco, who is a computer programmer for the philosophy department at IU.
I usually describe it as sort of a supernatural, horror, murder, mystery, psychological thriller type of radio show.
And co-author Dave Johnson, now a marine archaeologist living in Florida.
I like to think of Hayward as one of those 1960s horror comic books.
The old Hayward Mansion is located somewhere along the seacoast of Maine, but our story really starts in the Midwest, here in Bloomington, Indiana. In 1992, hoping to start a local radio theater troupe, I met with some folks over on the Indiana University campus.
All members of this troupe of improv comedians, and this guy named Richard Fish came to see us play one night and said, we're starting up a community radio station, and we were wondering if y'all would be interested in taping some of your improv and putting it on the radio to see what would work. So we all went out to his studio, and we were doing the improv stuff, and this gentleman, Matt Bocco, and I sat down and said, you know, it'd be neat if we could all get together and do something that was kind of a little different than comedy, and we were both interested in doing a horror show. We then adjourned to a local tavern and started drinking and talked a little bit more, and I think to everybody's surprise, a week later, we showed up at our next improv meeting with a 30-minute script.
Okay, we've got a studio, we've got a bunch of actors, let's put on a radio show.
Next thing I knew, one thing led to another, and we were producing Hayward Sanitarium full bore and writing more scripts, and it just kept going from there.
All of a sudden, a lot of people were willing to work on it. I guess that was when I first decided that it was more than just, you know, a writing exercise or something I just did to, you know, kill some time while everybody was off being funny.
We produced the first two episodes that way.
This is Hayward Sanitarium, episode one, typewriter scene, take three.
Then we listened to them. And we said, this is good. We liked what we heard.
We had moved into territories unknown for all of us and came out shining.
It's a great thing to say about the grassroots effort for community radio, that a bunch of college kids in a community radio station can come up with this idea, put it on national public radio, and then, you know, it'll just keep going. Heck, if we can do it, I hope other people get out there and turn on their tape recorders and start expressing their own creativity.
Matt and Dave proceeded to write their way into Hayward Sanitarium.
It's sort of a serial approach to horror.
There's this creepy old mansion on the East Coast that's been turned into a mental hospital for the criminally insane, and it is sort of the heart of a conspiracy involving kind of esoteric forces.
For the first six episodes, it was a lot of fun where everybody was saying, what's going to happen next, what's going to happen next, I think this is going to happen next. And part of the thing that's worked is it's been so open, and there's so many tangled and confusing plot lines, everybody thinks that they can figure it out. We set out originally to just tell a half-hour story every time. The plot was something we were playing with just underneath it, and it really has taken over in the last shows.
But we did sort of write our way out of it because it got so complex. Things basically gained a momentum of their own, and at that point, the show, the plot, and everything pretty much took off, you know, like a runaway train. And at a certain point, yeah, we did have to sort of stop and go, what happened? You know, what did we just do?
The development of the series was deeply influenced by the many, many wonderful actors we found in our community.
I played Richard Atwater, who is the kind of everyman associated with the piece. He is a psychologist who has been assigned to Hayward Sanitarium to replace a psychologist who has just recently died and begins to discover that something is not quite right at the sanitarium.
Gentlemen, Dr. Atwater.
Ah, Dr. Atwater, I have been greatly looking forward to our meeting. I am Professor Karl Hauptmann.
I'm sorry, let's go back to the beginning. My eye looked
we'll
at the wrong
going.
Place on the thing.
I think I've played various and sundry orderlies and guards. I was the Dark Father in one episode. But probably the most airtime I had was as John Osmond in episode 4.
Oh, it hurts you really bad, Fleischer.
Oh, shit. I don't think you will hurt him.
Be careful, John.
Sort of the whole point of the show was it would be, you know, kind of interesting to see what normal average people would do in just totally outrageous circumstances. And I think the actors have really made that very believable.
And, of course, by the time the later episodes happened, people were pretty comfortable with their parts, too. So instead of having to, explain how the character is supposed to act, they already know how the character is supposed to act. We just need to get through the specific scene.
You can tell they've matured as things have gone, and they've really driven where the characters are going. We now have people who are interested in the characters because our actors have developed them.
Recording and producing Hayward took on a new and very different aspect as we began to take our actors out of the studio to actual locations and recorded most of the series with a single stereo microphone.
John and I tried to capture the realism of the scene as opposed to getting a perfect read every time. I think some of the most effective scenes became the ones where people were... you could hear them picking things up and setting them down. You could hear them using things that were in their hands. It was very much a sense that you were there because you could hear things. You could hear that their footsteps were their footsteps. You could hear them walking through grass and across leaves. From an engineer's point of view, and I'm sure John would concur with this, it does speed up production time because you don't have to add a lot of things to it. Since there are all these organic sounds that you're recording on location, you don't have to add footsteps. You don't have to add night ambience because you're already outside at night. All you have to get are clean takes or enough takes that you can edit them together and make sure that you're recording there on the same night, on the same, you know, during about the same time, because the sound does vary.
Recording live on location like that, the actors play off the surroundings and play off each other.
Some of them actually had some movie experience, but most of them had a little, if not very extensive, theater experience. So they're very used to being able to move in the space that they're acting within. They're very conscious of their movements. So it was really easy to choreograph, I guess, certain scenes to where you could hear what the actors were doing and, they could pick up the phone at the right time, where they could scuffle and get to this side of the room at this point in the scene so that we could hear it moving past the microphones, perspective from left to right.
Okay, this is episode 8, scene 6, part B, take 3. Cue commotion.
Allie, what the...
I'm not going to break that.
felt real, and so when something scary happens, you feel it.
Working on location turned out to have a profound effect on the process of producing Hayward, and even more so on the final results.
Went out with a two-track digital audio tape recorder and a stereo microphone.
You rolling?
Rolling.
Okay, it's episode 7, scene 8. Pick up on Chandler's line. We will call this take 8.
We would talk about the number of scenes. We'd talk with the director and with the sound engineer. We'd run over the scenes a couple of times to make sure that the action was paced right as far as the dialogue was concerned, and make sure that we all have a through line as far as our acting is concerned. Then we would begin to block that out, stage it out, decide where the microphone would be placed, if the microphone would be moving, or maybe if the actors are going to move. We would discuss props or any necessary items for the scene or sound effects as could be needed. And many times we would actually stage out as closely as possible to the action that was taking place because we were working in a very, very sensitive environment with sensitive microphones and sensitive taping materials. We could pick up the slightest problem.
Cut, Kirk, I mean.
And then we would go through and do a couple of takes.
Nope. You're rolling, John?
Nope, another car.
We'd get a couple more and...
Let's respot and get it again. We had a jet come over here.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, with everything, we try and get as many safeties. Even though we might feel we have it on tape the way we want it, we would try and get a couple of safeties just to make sure.
Okay, this is Atwater Office Scene, take 11.
Oh, Dr. Atwater, I didn't know the room was reserved. Am I interrupting anything?
No, not at all, Dr. Chandler. I'm actually waiting for...
Please, let me try that again.
Sure.
I'm slobbing it.
All right, we'll keep rolling. Atwater Office Scene, this is take 12.
Those get edited. Then those edited scenes are flown to an 8-track recorder. Any additional effects that are needed are added.
Chandler's car going off the edge of the cliff, his car being pushed off the cliff. I remember we recorded John's car, and we pushed it down a gravel driveway so that you could hear it rolling on gravel. Down a hill, then across a little grass.
Episode 7, scene 8, just me sitting here in the car, rolling along, take 2.
Those are mixed down, and the scenes, as well as music between the scenes, are all edited together in a digital editor.
Goodbye, Georgie!
Now that I'm working in a lot of film environments, I'm amazed at the similarities between our audio environment, our audio production environment, and the film environment. In many ways, it was a lot like television.
That was a good take, except for the jet, but I think we can live with the jet.
Maybe. We have to cut out of it, and it'll suddenly disappear.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the only problem.
It was a very family environment in the sense that we could all kind of collaborate and add or subtract to what was being done, whether it was the dialogue or the way it was staged. We would come together and discuss it in that manner. While we might have some ideas when we start out in a rough sketch, it was a very developmental process, one where we could all kind of grow, and the piece could grow at the same time.
So what has just happened right before this? The one guy killed, and we all jumped the van. Okay, good.
This is when we found Bill.
Right. And me and him have just run back into the van.
And we were already here. Right.
Yeah, but me and Eichmann have just run back, and we should be breathing.
Right.
You know, and we're starting at 149.
I think it was a natural thing. It's an exciting thing where everybody seems to be interested and alive and energetic.
Hello, Mr. Listen, I'm sorry we took so long. I hope everything is going along smoothly.
Hello, Doctor. I've lost the place, and I'm not sure what page it's on.
It's been a great experience.
best example of our location technique is probably episode 4.
Oh, this one. Too loud.
Yeah,
I can't wear this light because it just totally bangs on my head.
Okay,
yeah,
never mind.
If I track you like this with this light, is that enough light?
I think I can do it in the dark.
We went in at night, and people read with flashlights and candles and whatever light sources we could get together. It was a unique environment too. It was very much like being on a movie set because it was outside at night in a graveyard. In a spooky old graveyard, and there were headstones there from the 1800s.
You heard the echoes off the trees and off the tombstones.
I could do it quieter, scream.
Where would you like me to be?
It's got to be real.
Okay.
I can make it happen. You just make it real.
Hang for a minute. Okay. Yeah, your scream at the beginning is good. When you fall, don't scream so much as get the wind knocked out of you with a little bit of a scream.
Oh!
Yeah.
Hey.
We had a very lucky break. You know, at first we thought, oh my God, it's raining, what are we going to do? But then it developed into this massive thunderstorm. And most people, when they hear it, are very shocked when I tell them that that's all real. We were filming underneath a we're recording underneath a shelter in the middle of a rainstorm. And the thunderclaps that actually came, you know, the actors are playing off them.
We also have two interns from Toronto, Bill and Janice. They're over by the large mausoleum.
I see. Yeah. So, who's that with them?
Yeah. Oh, that's Wilford Fleischer. Yeah. He's the caretaker of the cemetery. Yeah. You'll definitely want to talk to him. He's quite the character.
It ain't safe here after midnight. Don't say I didn't warn ya.
They were a little bit scared being in a graveyard at night, and you heard that in the performance.
Okay, cut. I'm sorry, I need to adjust my levels for the scream.
It really got down to the nuts and bolts of horror, which is the gore. You've got the scene with Hallie and the shovel, and she's beating this guy senseless, and he's going to cut everybody up until everyone is gone, and Hallie's the only one that stands between him and civilization, and she pulps his skull. It's great.
Can't you see that you're just wasting my time?
Well, then I'll just have to kill your puppet!
I know Matt had a very difficult time directing the combat scene in the graveyard, and it came across very well.
Feel the burn. Feel the burn, dudes. Okay. Act 4, Hugh, 113, take number 7.
So, Last Minute Productions, a nonprofit group in a small Midwestern town, has now produced 10 half-hour episodes of a major dramatic radio series. This has raised some interesting questions among our listeners, like, who paid for all this? Does the story have an ending? When are the rest of the episodes going to be produced? And especially, what happens next? Well, it's time for some answers. First, who pays for this radio series?
The most difficult thing of any type of venture, especially this one, is doing it as a kind of labor of love.
When we started out, I think many of us were in a stage of our lives where we had the freedom to do something like this. We had lots of free time to get together to do a production on this gratis.
Trying to make time where you might not have this as your full-time job or your full-time effort. You've got to work. You've got to pay your rent.
We were just a bunch of college kids with an idea, and we couldn't have done it without the studio behind the idea, giving us the freedom to explore our creativity.
I think many of us have moved on to other parts of our lives. I'm now working as a mastering engineer in a cassette plant. Some of our primary cast has actually moved to different cities.
Getting people together to make sure that this can happen is sometimes extremely difficult. But we managed to do it with Hayward Sanitarium, and as I said, we're all a family. We all came out loving each other, and I hope we get to do it again.
The truth is, Hayward Sanitarium has been created on a budget of next to nothing. We have raised a little money, especially through the stalwart support of Andy Trudeau, head of cultural programming at National Public Radio, but only enough to pay some basic expenses. Nobody working on this production has ever been paid for their efforts. Recording equipment and studio time have been entirely donated by Lodestone Productions and other professionals. Actors, writers, sound effects people, administrators, engineers, all have given generously of their time and sometimes a little cash for gas money or pizza. Next, does the story have an ending? Well, the writers say...
So what's going to be fun is to see how our vampires and our warlocks and our psychiatrists and our ghost hunters all meet in the final episodes to provide us with the conclusion to this first set of stories.
Episode 13 is of course, you know, has to be important because it's the 13th episode. And, of course, episode 16 is going to be a big deal.
Gosh, I really don't want to give too much away because the plot is, it takes some interesting turns.
You start to see more of the foundation, like how far-reaching it is and where it is in our sort of little alternate universe.
We're really going to find out where the corruption is in the sanitarium.
You start to learn more about some of the things that caused Dermot's madness, and...
We're going to have a death.
You know, you start to find out more about Elias Devon and what part he has to play or had to play and everything, and now we start to reveal some of the different threads that are being pulled, Richard and Justin and so forth. Start to be able to see enough that they can act. So you see a lot more acting and a lot less, you know, learning. It's more like, you know, now I know sort of what's going on and I can do something about it. So you see a lot of that. There's a lot of traveling involved. A lot of it happens in on the East Coast, and then there's some, of course, in the Deep South, Justin's sort of home stomping ground territory. There's some, like, adventure on the high seas type stuff.
And boy, when you think about the next episodes where we've got voodoo and witchcraft and the slave ship and when we tie in the Nazis, that's just fantastic.
There's a lot more revealed.
In the later shows when we stop pulling the punches and start messing with these people because, you know, eventually that's going to happen, I think everybody's going to really delight in the scares that are to come.
Going a step farther, I asked Matt Bocco where the clues have been planted in the story so far.
The first episode is vital.
Upon opening it, I discovered several dust-covered, leather-bound volumes. Oh, yes, it seemed not all the records had been lost. I took them to the table and sat down. I rushed through them to find what I was looking for. It was there in the third volume. Elias Devon, convicted of commerce with the devil, found guilty and sentenced to be burned at the stake. It was all there. Deeds, records, genealogies, depositions, every piece I needed and more. Handwritten, dated November 1st, 1683. I turned the yellowed pages, one by one, searching for more. Until I found the head. Staring at me, gloating.
I'd say one is very important. 6, of course, is very important.
Jenny!
We have decided to kill your mind, Doctor.
I've been greatly looking forward to your visit, Dr. Atwater. Are you sure my delusion has promised is some kind of sexual aberration?
Get away from me.
You really should have let me stay with you, Doctor.
Found clues in episodes 3 and 9, and in fact in all of them. So the story will finish in 16 episodes. When are the last 6 episodes going to be produced? Answer, as soon as we can. We will need more funding for the final 6 because we'll have to do some traveling, and we're going to have to start paying people for their increasingly valuable time. We're working on it. Stay tuned. Many people helped make Hayward Sanitarium. We can't list them all here, but they've all been credited in the episodes. This program featured the voices of Tony Brewer, John Weber, Matt Bocco, David Johnson, and Mike Kelleher.
Reporting for radio show. In a cemetery?
Funding for this documentary has been provided by... Lodestone Productions, and by the great generosity of its cast and crew. We just did it, folks.
Where you guys from? Bloomington?
Yeah.
That's where I'm from. I never heard no guys doing stuff in a...
Does anyone have one of our cards?
I am. Yeah. What are you supposed to be
It's filming? For a radio drama. We were just getting some background noise.
Background noise for a radio drama.
We were just going to put it in at the studio. We just came out to record some noises.
What kind of background noises?
The night. Crickets and so forth.
You had to come to a cemetery.
This program was produced for Last Minute Productions by me. I'm Richard Fish. You can write Last Minute Productions at Post Office Box 217, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402.
Keep your hands where I can see them, okay?
Sure.
Box 217, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402.
Bloomington 3342. Go ahead.
Car 3J John 6102, John Weber, Bloomington, Burgundy 87 Nissan, and Fire 3A Adam 6763, Richard L. Fish, Bloomington, on a blue 87 Nissan 3-door.
3342.
Tape copies of this program or the Hayward Sanitarium radio series are available at 1-800-411-MIND. That's 800-411-MIND.
Well, guys, be good.
No big deal.
Take care, guys.
Cool. Have a good
night.
We just
got a call on it.
Whoops. All right, let's go home. We are coming to... All right, where's that... Oh my God. You had that on, didn't you?
Everything you've heard has been a last-minute production.